And you're listening to Against the Grain. The great Polish independent Marxist historian Isaac Deutscher was one of the most important radical writers and thinkers of the 20th century. He was born 100 years ago in Galicia, Poland, then part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and died 40 years ago on August 19, 1967, in Rome. A heretic and renegade, he was expelled from the Polish Communist Party for his opposition to its stance of branding social democrats as fascists at a moment when Nazism was ascendant. Deutscher is perhaps best known for his trilogy about the life of the Soviet leader Leon Trotsky, titled The Prophet Armed, The Prophet Unarmed, and The Prophet Outcast, which Graham Greene called one of the greatest biographies in the English language. To talk about Deutscher's writings and his legacy, I'm very pleased to be joined by radical scholar and historian Mike Davis. He's the author of many books, including Magical Urbanism, City of Quartz, and most recently, In Praise of Barbarians, Essays Against Empire, published by Haymarket Books. He's on the editorial board of the New Left Review and was a friend of Deutscher's wife, Tamara. Mike, welcome to Against the Grain.
My pleasure.
So tell us in a nutshell why you believe on the anniversary of his death, those of us on the left need to be familiar with the work of Isaac Deutscher.
Well, Deutscher is in many ways, or was in many ways, the moral and intellectual bridge between the generation of 1917 of classical revolutionary socialism and the new left of the 1960s. He also represents a deepening and continuation of the critical project undertaken by people like Viktor Serge, Trotsky himself, and exiled, trying to understand the tragedy of the Soviet Union under Stalin, but also trying to understand, which is the particular mission of Isaac Deutscher, the contradictions and hopes and possibility of the Soviet Union, particularly after the death of Stalin in 1953. He gave people in the 1960s, at least to those of us who were willing to listen, an interpretive standpoint, an analytic context that was different from any of the received orthodoxies on the American left.
So why do you think it is that on the centenary of his birth, there aren't celebrations of Deutscher in this country?
Well, I mean, first of all, these are craven times. A whole generation, heroic generation of the American left has passed with little commemoration. But I think also in Deutscher's case, it was precisely because he was a heretic. He had the distinction of being simultaneously denounced by leading Cold Warriors, social democrats, supporters of the Soviet Union, and Orthodox Trotskyists. There was never a Deutscherite party or a Deutscherite faction, and I think the sheer independence of his thought and the critical sharpness of his mind did not predispose people to be his followers. All the more important, of course, to rediscover his work and to rediscover his analysis.
Well, tell us about Isaac Deutscher's origins and the milieu that he came out of.
Well, he was born in Galicia, not too far from Auschwitz. Studied in Krakow, which was the former capital of Austria and Poland, and great center, one of the greatest centers of Jewish culture. His father hoped that he would become a great rabbi. As a teenager, he was a stunning poet with a large audience, and then went to study in Warsaw, and quickly joined the underground Communist Party. Poland, in the late 1920s, was under the dictatorship of Marshal Pasolski, and the communists were, in fact, deep underground. And he became the major editor of the underground publications of the Polish Communist Party, and then went to Moscow in 1931, where he was offered several academic positions in the Soviet Union.
Not long after that time, in 1933, he was expelled from the Polish Communist Party. Tell us about that, and maybe you can describe for us the broad political context in which this all took place.
Well, first of all, the Polish Communist Party itself was a direct descendant of the Social Democratic Party led by Rosa Luxemburg. and inherited some of her independence of thought and critical tradition. It was a small party, but it was a smart party with a stellar group of intellectuals and thinkers. And in the late 20s, as I say, was deep underground combating a very dictatorial regime, something almost like Pinochet in Poland. But the communist leadership at the time considered the regime fascist, and Deutscher thought this was a huge mistake. And Deutscher and others in the party who banded together as an opposition were opposed to the so-called left-period line of the Communist International that denounced socialists as social fascists, that made no distinction between real fascists like the Italians or above all the German Nazis and dictatorships. And Deutscher's crime, for which he was eventually expelled from the party with others in 1932, was his insistence on the urgency of creating unity in the workers' movements amongst communists and socialists against the peril of the Nazi Party in Germany. And this was well before he was in contact with Trotsky, or in any sense thought himself a Trotskyist. He was part of a current, a larger current in European communism that was horrified by the sectarian line of the Comintern, and with like-minded socialists was desperately struggling to put up a united front against the menace of Hitler.
And you just spoke about the Comintern, the Communist International, which was the international organization that had been initially founded by Lenin and had evolved through the struggles in the Soviet Union in the 1920s. And I think to understand Deutscher's trajectory, one needs to understand what those struggles were within the Soviet Union and the larger Communist International.
Well, so much of Deutscher's life, his great work in the 50s, was the reconstruction of the struggle that occurred in the 1920s. In the Soviet Union. Lenin, at his death, in the last year of his life, waged a desperate struggle to prevent the secession of Stalin as the secretary of the party from taking over the party. And by the middle 20s, virtually the entire old guard of the Bolshevik Party had come together in a series of oppositions, but most importantly, something called the Left Opposition against Stalin. These were all the people, Zinoviev, Kamenev, Rykov, Tomsky, Bukharin, and so on, who were later shot by Stalin in 1937 and 1938. And in the early 20s, and up through Lenin's death, and even for a few years after that, great dissent and public discussion was still possible in the Soviet Union. But by 1927, 1928, that began to become impossible. And Trotsky, of course, was first put into external exile, and then beginning of the 30s, kicked out of the Soviet Union. And Stalin began to increasingly consolidate his control over the party, culminating in the year 1937, where he executed literally tens of thousands of communists.
And Deutscher himself wrote about the Moscow trials, which was the place where Stalin put his former colleagues on trial for treason and for fomenting counter-revolution.
And, of course, these were nightmarish trials because people were forced to confess. It was not enough simply to arrest and kill people. People were induced to confess by being told that the future of socialism, the Soviet Union, depended on their confession, their false confession, and out of misguided, you know, loyalty, people confessed to, you know, the most monstrous caricatures, great revolutionaries did. And this is a period, of course, when Trotsky was the most magnificent. Trotsky, in a way, was absolutely suited to, you know, this role of the what Deutscher called the prophet outcast, you know, fighting to defend the honor and the, you know, the legacy of the revolution, the truth of the revolution against the falsifications and lies of Stalin. But what's so interesting about Deutscher as a historian, and Deutscher as a partisan of Trotsky, is that his magnificent trilogy, his biography, is in no sense a hagiographic biography. He can be very critical of Trotsky at times, and he fundamentally disagreed with Trotsky's decision to try and create a new communist international, the so-called Fourth International.
International organization. And Deutscher's argument was what? That it was the times were too bleak to embark on such a project?
Well, yes, and that the Communist International and the Communist parties still had such a large hold, huge hold, on advanced sectors of the working class. One of the things that's most important about Deutscher as a historian is his exacting attention to social forces, the social forces that underlay the personalities and underlay the biographies. And he thought that Trotsky, for heroic and understandable reasons, was made a grievous mistake by attempting to create a new international. When, in fact, it was a period of defeat, of defensive struggle, when advanced workers everywhere still believed in the mythology of Stalin's Russia, of the five-year plan. And this was typical of the opinions that so often separated Deutscher from the sectarian left in Europe and the United States.
Speaking of the social forces that you just touched on, Trotsky made a parallel between the Russian Revolution and the French Revolution, and that parallel was then expanded by Deutscher in the Trotsky trilogy. Can you explain for us that argument, what the parallel was and how it was used as a sort of analytical tool to understand how the promise of the Russian Revolution, which, you know, so many people had put their hopes in, had turned into something that was in so many ways horrific?
Well, I mean, in both cases, the great French Revolution of 1789 and the 1917 Revolution, the process of defending the revolution, in the first case against the crown might of Europe, in the second, case against intervention by almost a dozen foreign powers, the very process of defense of the revolution dispersed, disorganized, destroyed much of the social base of the revolution, particularly in the Russian case. And Deutscher builds on Trotsky's own analysis of this. You know, Trotsky showed how by the end of the Russian Civil War in 1921, industrial production was a small fraction of what it had been in 1912. Workers were either in party positions, unemployed, or died in battle. The Soviet working class of the early 1920s was sociologically very different. It was a peasant working class. Much the same thing had happened in the course of the French Revolution. Deutscher even extends the analogy back to the Cromwellian Revolution, the English Revolution of 1640. But at the same time, Deutscher argued more than Trotsky was prepared to, that even in its most degenerated and despotic form. Even Napoleon as emperor or Stalin virtually is new czar, although many of the ideals and most important democratic processes of the revolution have been destroyed, the revolution still preserved a certain progressive dynamic, certainly in the case of Napoleonic Europe with its reforms of laws and its overthrow of monarchies. But Deutscher also believed that Stalinism would not outlive Stalin, and that there were other forces stemming from Stalinist modernization, stemming from the five-year plan and its huge enlargement of working class and literacy, that would eventually transform the Soviet Union. He was of the opinion that capitalism couldn't be restored in the Soviet Union. The revolution was unfinished, and he believed that new forces would emerge from the labor movement and above all, from youth, that would reinvigorate socialist opposition in the Soviet Union. And, of course, tragically, that didn't turn out to be the case.
Right, and we'll speak a little later on about that. Trotsky also wrote a biography of Stalin. Tell us about that.
Well, this was a quite extraordinary thing to do for both Trotsky and for Deutscher as a supporter of Trotsky. And both of them made heroic efforts not to succumb to the distaste of the project, to their hatred of...
And you're mentioning that Trotsky also wrote a biography of Stalin.
Trotsky also characterized you know, Stalin too. Deutscher's book was his first big book and made quite a splash when it was published in 1949 or 1950. In retrospect, I don't think you could say it's successful in any way as the biography of Trotsky. And the problem is not only that, you know, the question of affinity, that Deutscher obviously sympathetic to Trotsky and also greater access to documents, but Stalin is simply perhaps the most enigmatic figure of the 20th century, and an enormously difficult figure to understand. On one hand, you know, his monstrous crimes and huge defeats that were his fault at the beginning of the war. On the other hand, he's probably unquestionably the shrewdest and smartest of the Allied wartime leaders. What Deutscher was actually doing was writing a triptych, and when he died in the spring of 1967, he was in the midst of working on a huge biography of Lenin, which he actually thought would be his greatest work. So his real life work would be these huge mirror like portraits of the three most important characters in the Russian Revolution and the Soviet Union.
Speaking about one part of that, maybe the most successful dimension was this three-part biography of Leon Trotsky. When I interviewed the radical British writer and filmmaker Tariq Ali, I asked him about the importance for him of Isaac Deutscher and the Trotsky trilogy, and I want to play just a brief edited clip of that conversation.
Well, Isaac Deutscher was a remarkable figure. His son of a rabbi in Poland, self-educated, came as an exile to Britain, speaking only Polish, taught himself English, and became one of the finest writers of English prose. His history, his trilogy of Trotsky, is a literary masterpiece. And even if you don't agree with his estimate of the Russian Revolution or the leading figures in it, it's a book worth reading because it is one of the most beautifully and exquisitely written books around. Reading Isaac Deutscher completely opened my eyes. I had come from Pakistan, an Asian country where the communist tradition was very strong. And even though instinctively I knew there were lots of things wrong with the Soviet Union, one couldn't theorize them in isolation. So reading Isaac Deutscher, when I did, completely transformed my understanding of that revolution and what had actually happened. Both the way he wrote and what he wrote, the combination was just amazing. And I, even now, I can sort of, when I think back on it, I can feel the intellectual excitement that this was something really new, that doors were being opened for one to be able to think for oneself.
And that was Tariq Ali in 2005 speaking about Isaac Deutscher on this program. So, Mike Davis, as a historian, how do you estimate the importance of Deutscher's trilogy on Trotsky?
Well, it's difficult to think of another 20th century biography which combines the classic elements of great tragedy. And Tamara Deutscher used to talk about how when Isaac was writing the Trotsky trilogy in the 50s, how he always kept Shakespeare and Shakespeare's tragedies by his bedstead, with at the same time such almost breathtaking political intellectual landscapes, his reconstruction of the debates amongst the Bolsheviks against the social background of a country that almost was destroyed by the First World War and the Civil War, and to understand the moral and historic stakes, and above all the uncompleted nature, the unfinished nature of the process and the lies. Deutscher, above all, was trying to convey to his readers that not only were these struggles and debates of immense importance to humanity, but they were ongoing, which is why he titled the incredible book he wrote in 1967, his last book, The Unfinished Revolution, which was a prospectus for the possibility of profound social change in, you know, in the Soviet Union. So this is not biographer as mortician. This is biographer as combatant, but a biographer capable of the kind of detachment and critical standpoint that he could, when needed, separate himself from the subject, even when the subject was as overwhelming as Leon Trotsky.
Well, given that he was a partisan, what was his relationship to organized Trotskyism?
It was a conflictual relationship, almost without exception, for two reasons. One is because he did not endorse the formation of the Fourth International, and quite frankly, he saw it as a dead end. This is not because he didn't believe in small socialist groups, or because he had ceased to believe in socialist organizing. On the contrary, when he came to the United States in 65 and then for longer visits in 66, he hammered away at the importance of the student movement and intellectuals forging ties with rank-and-file labor in the United States and rebuilding socialist politics. But he did not accept this kind of version of the apostolic secession from Lenin to Trotsky, or from the Third International to the Fourth International. He also fell out with other dissident groups, including Tony Cliff and Hal Draper and the people around the independent socialist clubs, who thought he was far too soft on the bureaucracy because he attached importance. He had a kind of dialectical view that what was happening in the Soviet Union in the 60s was a combination of halting but important reformist attempts at the top and rebellion from the bottom of society. And he thought these reform attempts at the top, open vital spaces for workers, students, intellectuals to reassert themselves. And traditional Trotskyists and dissident Marxists, many of them had come to believe in a kind of Big Bang theory where Stalinism would have to be overthrown by something like a 1917 revolution. So for all these reasons and more, Deutscher was both a great influence on the New Left individually, but he was often the butt of ruthless criticism and often very, very unfair attacks, labeling him as, he was labeled on one hand by Cold Warriors as a supporter of Stalinism by loyal pro-Moscow, communists as a CIA agent, and by sections of the Trotskyist left as an apologist for the new bureaucracy.
The program is Against the Grain. I'm speaking with Mike Davis about the legacy of Isaac Deutscher. We're going to take a short break and be back in a minute.